From the Moon Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn, coming to you from New York all this week. On today's show, the musical Come From Away tells the stories of thousands of people stranded in Canada on 9/11, but there's only 12 actors.
We thought, not only is it tons of fun and like improv Second City style to jump from person to person, but also it's really efficient and cheap.
It's really incredible what these 12 people do. I mean, we talk about, there's almost 7,000 people on the planes and 9,000 people in town. So, we talk about them portraying 16,000 stories.
And the holidays can be a drag for some people. So why not cheer up with a holiday drag show?
KPCC podcasts are supported by Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting the emotionally authentic A Star is Born, directed by Bradley Cooper, starring Cooper, Lady Gaga, and Sam Elliott, for consideration in all categories.
Welcome to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Thanks for joining us. Where you were on September 11th, 2001 is, for many of us, one of those memories that you will never forget.
This just in, you were looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World
another
Trade
plane coming in from the side.
You did. That was out of absolute.
Yes, and that's
view.
The second explosion. You could see the plane.
Today we've had a national tragedy. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country.
When U.S. airspace was shut down on 9/11, 38 planes carrying some 7,000 passengers were rerouted to an airport near the remote town of Gander in Newfoundland, the most eastern province of Canada. What happened next would change everyone involved and also inspire the stage musical Come From Away. It was created by the married couple Irene Sankoff and David Hine. They traveled to Gander in 2011 to interview people who were reuniting on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. The character stories and songs of Come From Away are based on those interviews.
One plane, then another, and then another, and then another.
Is this on? Sorry, I'm new. This is Rogers TV, Channel 9. My name's Janice Mosher, and I'm reporting live from Gander Airport, where the 19th plane has just touched down. I'm here with
Bonnie Harris. On a normal day, we get a half dozen flights. Now, we already got three times that many landing in 2 hours.
So, I want to go back to the 10-year anniversary of 9/11 in Gander, Newfoundland. How did that idea first get proposed to you, and what happened when you got there?
A friend of ours, Michael Rubinoff, mentioned the story. We were sort of aware of what had happened there, and when our friend mentioned it to us, we started deep diving and found out there was going to be a commemoration ceremony happening on the 10th anniversary, and all of these Come From Aways, which is what the Newfoundlanders call anyone who's not from there, were returning 10 years later to commemorate what had happened, to reunite with these lifelong friends they had made there, and to sort of celebrate the kindness they had seen. So we got a grant from the Canadian government to go out there and interview people, and all of this press was looking for 5-second sound bites, and we were looking for every story we could possibly hear. And so we would talk to people for hours and hours and hours at a time, and every story was better than the next one, and we just came back with thousands of incredible stories.
When you're starting to think about what unites those stories, what were the themes that immediately you started noticing?
Themes of kindness, really, that's the main one. And I'd also say themes of bravery, of taking a risk, of saying, we don't know where you're from, we don't know who you are, but what we can see is that you're uncomfortable and you need help, and we're here for you. We're gonna open our hearts and our homes and take a risk and let strangers come in and stay with us. Which I think people see that it's nice and they see that it's generous, but I think they don't see how intelligent it actually was. That they could have had 7,000 scared, angry people, that just really dropped from the sky on this town of about 9,000 people, but instead they made all of these friends.
11:53 a.m.
Tuesday,
September 11th, 2001. Any available community buildings will be converted into shelters. With thousands of passengers arriving at any minute, the town is asking for help with, well, anything you can do.
Crystallize on the news that they're looking for blankets and bedding and maybe some food.
Do you know what they need and how much?
I need something to do,
cause I can't watch the news anymore.
Can I help? Is there something I need to do? Something to keep me from thinking of all of those scenes on the tube?
I need something to do, cause I can't watch the news.
No, I can't watch the news anymore.
In the wind,
answer from nobody.
So much of the show is about the stories that you heard and as they were related to you. But so much of the telling of the show is almost as if the audience is you doing your own research, that these characters are telling the stories almost as if we are kind of listening as interviewers. Was that always in the original design of the show, that people would be telling their stories to the audience as they told the stories to you when you were doing your research?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We saw Peter and the Starcatcher, and we loved the way people were talking directly to the audience. It was a band of actors all working together, going seamlessly in and out of scenes. We also thought of the Laramie Project and Chorus Line, and you know, thought truth was more amazing than fiction in this case, and keeping it like an interview, you know, not quite reporting. I mean, it is a piece of theater. It's not a documentary, but, you know, just keeping it into direct address was really the way to go with this.
One of the things that that we loved about going out to Newfoundland is they have this tradition of kitchen parties out there. It's how they've gotten through their terrible winters and the, you know, the hard life of living on this rock in an ocean. And everyone will bring over their instruments and their stories and their songs, and they have survived by coming together as a community and telling their stories and singing their songs. So what we wanted to do with the audience was invite them into a Newfoundland kitchen party and say, you have your stories. Here's 16,000 stories that happened in Newfoundland. Come with us there and hear this amazing thing that happened.
David, you've said that you grew up listening to music from Newfoundland. How would you define it? What's distinctive about it? And what did you want to capture in terms of the musical language of Come From Away?
Newfoundland has this incredible, rich traditional music. It's Celtic. It involves fiddles, accordions, a hand drum called a bowron, which is like the heartbeat of the piece. There's something called an ugly stick, which is basically a mop screwed into a boot with bottle caps screwed into the side that you hit. It sounds amazing. And it's this traditional music that people have played for hundreds of years, but you put it on a Broadway stage and it sounds like nothing you have ever heard. It's life-affirming in that you know, the hard life that people have lived there for years and years, they respond to that by creating this music that makes you want to dance, that makes you want to grab a partner and swing them around. And that's what we wanted to show on stage, is musically show how these people responded to this tragedy to help these people. And then on top of this traditional Newfoundland music, we also layered world music from around the world to create this sort of musical metaphor for people landing there and creating this musical moment that is greater than the sum of its parts.
Coming up, before David Hein and Irene Sankoff created Come From Away, they wrote another show based on a true story, My Mother's Lesbian Jewish Wiccan Wedding.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting the emotionally authentic A Star Is Born, directed by Bradley Cooper, starring Cooper, Lady Gaga, and Sam Elliott. Joe Morgenstern of The Wall Street Journal says it's fresh from thunderous start to exquisite finish, and Owen Gleiberman of Variety calls it an emotional knockout. For consideration in all categories, including Best Picture and Best Director.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Thanks for joining us. Today, I'm talking with the creators of the stage musical Come From Away. The title is the term that people in Newfoundland call anyone who's from out of town. And on September 11, 2001, thousands of Come From Aways landed in a small Canadian town when their planes were diverted out of U.S. airspace. They stayed for days, and for many of them, the time in Gander changed their lives. The musical, which celebrates the ways that these strangers came together at a time of crisis, weaves true stories as told to Irene Sankoff and David Hein, the creators of the show. On the 10th anniversary of 9/11, they conducted thousands of hours of interviews with people both from Gander and from all over the world who were stranded there in 2001. The result is a quick-paced 100-minute stage musical with just 12 actors. Each one plays at least two characters, a townsperson and a come-from-away. Irene explains the reasoning for that double casting.
We're from Canada, so originally we thought this would only be done by high schools in Canada, and we thought, oh, it's, well, you know, not only is it tons of fun and like improv Second City style to jump from person to person and you know, as actors, that is just so much fun to do, but also it's really efficient and cheap. So not only is it a nice trick, but it means, you know, you only have to put, you know, 12 people in a van to get them somewhere to put on the show with their chairs and tables.
It's really incredible what these 12 people do. I mean, we talk about, you know, there's almost 7,000 people on the planes and 9,000 people in town. So, you know, we talk about them portraying 16,000 stories. And really, at least, at the very least, they all play a local and a come from away. So from a metaphor perspective, you know, what we're trying to say is we could always be in someone else's shoes at any instance, you know, on the turn of a dime, you could either need to be helped or be able to help someone.
There are very specific personal stories in this show, and a lot of those very specific and personal stories highlight larger themes. I want to play something from a song called Prayer.
There's a man here in town. He's lived here nearly his entire life. He heard that there was a rabbi diverted here, and he came to find me and tell me his story.
I was born in Poland, I think, and my parents, they were Jews. They sent me here before the war started. I still remember some of the prayers they taught me. As a boy, I was told I should never tell anyone I was Jewish, even my wife. But after what happened on Tuesday, so many stories, gah, just like that. I needed to tell someone.
So I'm wondering, first of all, is that a real story?
It is. The gentleman's name was Eddie Brake, and we didn't get a chance to meet him.
He's long since passed. Yeah.
But many people told us a story out there. I mean, I think that's what's incredible about, you know, all the stories that we're told is that they're true. Every time we were encouraged to fictionalize something or invent something, it just felt wrong. And you know, like Irene said, truth is not only stranger than fiction, it's more wonderful than fiction. This man who, decades after he had been sent to Canada, finally found a rabbi who he could actually, you know, talk about being Jewish with. And there's a very small detail in that he was given a yarmulke and prayed with this rabbi. And later when he did pass, he was buried with that yarmulke. And the show is filled with stories like that, true stories that you know, you never would have heard if you didn't go to Gander for the 10th anniversary.
Yeah, well, and then a friend of Eddie's showed up at the production in Toronto afterwards and validated, you know, a lot of what we had said, and it was really very touching.
You mentioned that Come From Away works in part because truth is better than fiction. Your previous musical, My Mother's Lesbian Jewish Wiccan Wedding, was also based on a true story, David. What did you find out about how true experiences can be turned into something greater than that individual experience? And how did that apply to Come From Away?
You know, I had been telling stories about about our family, about how my mom had come out to me as a teenager, had rediscovered her Jewish faith and fallen in love with a Wiccan woman for years. And they were just stories about my family. I never thought they were extraordinary in any way. But when Irene and I decided to write something, mostly so we could spend time together, people told us time and again, no, there's a lot of really amazing stories here. And I think what we found is that the same thing happened out in Newfoundland, is that when we went out there, you know, these people view what they did as just ordinary. Time and again, we would do these, you know, 3 or 4 hour long interviews, and we'd get to the end and they'd say, "Now, what are you doing? You're telling a story about people making sandwiches?" And we'd nod, and then they'd say, "Right. Good luck with that." and I think, you know, that's what's incredible about doing this process. And time and again, you know, bringing the real people to the show on opening night and having these, you know, family reunions basically for them, we get to show them that audiences around the world now are celebrating this thing that they think was ordinary is actually extraordinary. And it reminds them, you know, an audience member the other day said, "I forgot how nice we could be."
No, it was, "I forgot how good we could be.
Right. I think that's been something that they've learned, you know, watching their story on stage is that telling their story can be inspirational itself,
and joyous. And my mom has also had the same experience watching our first musical. They come and they get to celebrate their love every night.
There was an entire script that was fictionalized for my mother's lesbian Jewish Wiccan wedding. It was finished. And a friend of mine said, you know, the most exciting part about the show is that it's true. It's based on real life. And I came running home and I was like, David, we got to throw it out. We got to throw out the whole thing. And it was like, it was hard. It was hard to do. But then starting again from the beginning was just fascinating and so much more rewarding.
We're talking with Irene Sankoff and David Hine about their musical Come From Away. Do you think what happened on the day that your show is set can be instructive to audiences, that they can look at your show and be reminded that we can be good toward each other, that there is a way that we can treat other people with dignity and respect and acceptance, and that especially now, given how polarized not just our country is, but the world is, that a show like this can actually offer an incredibly important and timely lesson?
It's been such a gift for us to have the honor of sharing the story, to every day get to wake up and talk about people being nice to each other and people coming together despite their differences. And time and again, we look at our Twitter feeds and our Facebook feeds, and we see things that make us angry and make us miserable and divide us. And this story reminds us that we can actually come together, that we have more in common than we think. And I think it also reminds people that they can actually, make a difference, that you can actually make a difference by being kind, that you can make a difference by going out of your way to connect with strangers and realizing every day that, maybe strangers have more in common with us than we think.
You have sold the film rights and are working on a screen adaptation. What's your approach to making a movie version? And what are the things, even if it's like a song might have to go or something might have to be changed, what do you want to make sure you always protect in that adaptation?
The real people, honestly. From the very beginning, we said we weren't going to adapt the story or make changes to people's character that we couldn't sit down with them over coffee and say, oh, so this is what we had to do to make this story work or for us to be able to sell the film rights. I mean, it's been very, very clear to us from the beginning that, you know, these people, when they first interviewed us, we were doing the show for a college, and you know, and unbeknownst to all of us how far it would go, you know, we still really want to honor the fact that they've shared the stories with us, and we want to, you know, make sure we show Newfoundland in the best possible light. And of course, you know, honor those who are lost, whose stories we're telling, or whose loved ones come to see the show. And so it's keeping the integrity of the people's stories that we're telling.
What has happened to all the audio tape of the interviews that you did? Is there some way that all of that can be preserved, become an oral history project? What becomes of it?
Yeah, it's funny. When we first went out there, we went out with notepads, we quickly became evident, as we sat around the table with four or five people and they were all telling their stories, it was overlapping. We like frantically looked at our phones and we're like, do these record? How do we record this? And so we have all of these voice memos from our recordings, and we've kept them on CDs, and we have digital files for them. What's been interesting now is that Newfoundland and some museums in New York have actually started to reach out and say they're interested in preserving them in some way. And certainly we've transcribed them. It took hours and hours and hours to transcribe all the interviews we had. So we have those on file as well. But they're precious to us. For 7 years that we've been working on this musical, we've lived with these people's stories that they trusted us with, and
their voices literally, in our head every day,
Yeah. And so, they are funny, yeah. And they are moving, and they are incredible, and we could only fit as much of them in as we could into a 100-minute musical with 12 actors. So yeah, there's a treasure trove of material there.
Irene Sankoff and David Hine are the creators of Come From Away. Irene and David, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Come From Away is at the Amundsen Theater in downtown LA through January 6th. Coming up, Taylor Mack's Christmas show is filled with tinsel and sparkles, and that's just the costumes. Welcome to The Frame. I'm John Horn, and now a new take on the traditional Christmas pageant. Holiday Sauce is the latest extravaganza from the MacArthur Grant-winning drag performer Taylor Mack. Mack was last in L.A. with an astounding show, a 24-decade history of popular music. Mack returns this weekend with a special holiday-themed production. As The Frame contributor Chloe Veltman reports, Holiday Sauce is one of many productions that are turning drag into an enduring seasonal tradition.
The festive season is full of expectations. Dinner will be delicious, the gifts will be great.
I heard the bells on Christmas Day.
And everyone will get along, just like the Waltons merrily caroling on TV. But as many of us know, the reality is often quite different.
A little, like, water torture. It chisels away at you every single year.
Drag artist Taylor Mack doesn't have joyous memories of Christmas growing up gay in Stockton. Mack says the homophobia, hardline Christianity and consumerism were hard to swallow. The artist sees Holiday Sauce as an antidote to all of that.
Basically, the show is practicing the survival techniques for the holidays.
One of Mack's techniques is to twist musty old traditions like Christmas carols into wild new shapes.
In Bethlehem, a blessed babe was born.
When you really look at the lyrics, it's like Christmas is under siege and we all have to love it more. So I thought it'd be fun to turn it into a Wiccan Bollywood extravaganza.
Of comfort and joy, comfort and joy.
I can't stay.
Another technique of Mack's centers on reframing tough relationships. That's why the artist has hired a chorus of Los Angeles area seniors to sing with him on stage in the show.
I had rough holidays with grandparents, so I thought, let me bring a bunch of elders into the show and see if we can make that better.
You can see drag shows throughout the year in the Los Angeles area, but there's an abundance of offerings during the holidays, like To Jesus, Thanks for Everything, Snap, Holiday Drag Review Brunch, and the Holiday Drag Queen Story Hour.
I think it's the holidays, people want something kind of different.
LA-based actor Jeff Sumner portrays funny old ladies in pantomimes, a 200-year-old English holiday tradition gaining popularity in the US.
Can you pass me the honey, honey?
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one. That always works. Now it's your turn.
The company Sumner works for, Lithgow Family Panto, produces shows all over the country, from Southern California to Nashville. Sumner says Panto always involves the same elements: a love story, topical humour, and most importantly, a man in a dress.
This element of drag makes it much more fantastical and much more joyous, as if like another version of Santa Claus has just dropped into your living room.
The holidays provide an opportunity to attract broader audiences than might otherwise ordinarily attend a performance with cross-dressing. San Francisco-based drag artist and club owner Heck Lena says people bring their entire families to experience her annual show, titled The Golden Girls Live, The Christmas Episodes.
It's like the Nutcracker. It's like a holiday tradition now in San Francisco.
The Golden Girls has been going for 12 years, and like the many ballet companies churning out The Nutcracker every December, Heck Lena says it's the holiday shows that keep producers afloat.
I will say that everybody's trying to make their money.
Taylor Mack has up until now sniffed at holiday shows because of their commercial bent.
It also felt like people were doing it as a moneymaker.
So now that Mack is doing one, it comes with an anti-capitalist message, like much of the artist's previous work.
It's bargain day. Wanna buy a heart?
Mack's stormy take on the Dinah Washington classic Bargain Day is one of several songs in this vein.
We talk about Black Friday. We sing songs around that. We have a whole capitalism triptych in the show.
Although Mack chafes against the more commercial aspects of the holidays, the artist hopes to grow Holiday Sauce year by year into an extravaganza to eventually rival the mother of all mainstream holiday entertainments.
My fantasy is that we can get all the retired Rockettes in our show.
Mack isn't a fan of the famous Christmas spectacular at Radio City Music Hall.
It seems like such a sexist machine, and with some really creepy traditions to it, and just so corporate.
The drag artist says hiring former Rockettes to appear in Holiday Source would help to replace the patriarchal holiday traditions of old with new queer ones. And though Mac doesn't mention it, it'll also quite possibly rake in the cash. For The Frame, I'm Chloe Veltman.
Taylor Mack's Holiday Sauce plays December 14th and 15th at UCLA's Royce Hall. And you can catch Lithgow Family Panto's Beauty and the Beast at the Laguna Playhouse through December 30th. Some movie news before we go. The members of the Los Angeles Film Critics Association have agreed with their New York counterparts by voting Roma as the year's best picture. They differed on the Best Director prize, with the LA critics naming Deborah Granick for directing Leave No Trace. The New York critics went with Alfonso Cuarón for Roma, who also won the Cinematography Prize from both groups of critics. Cuarón was recently a guest on The Frame, and he spoke about taking the camera into his own hands.
It's almost like a ghost that is observing, looking at the past, and gliding through the past. That's the reason I wanted the camera to be very steady even when it moves, not having any shaky kind of situation. I wanted to feel more as if he's haunting you.
And another significant award was handed out this weekend. The International Documentary Association named the skateboarding film Minding the Gap as winner of the Best Feature, and its director, Bing Liu, was given the Emerging Filmmakers Award. And that is the show for today. I'm John Horn. We'll see you back here tomorrow.